everyone. This is Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. I guess this is episode 23, and in store for you today on episode 23 is we are going to discuss building good soil. Now, you might be asking, what in the world is having building good soil having to do with building a legacy? Well, a lot, especially if you are planning on leaving any kind of land when you pass away from here and leaving it in better shape than what you found it, which I believe is part of a legacy. And one of the principles that we have on the Legacy Podcast is that we are going to be good stewards of the land that we have. And we're going to do that, of course, as family farming, sustainable farming practices, permaculture, a lot of different ways we will apply that. But primarily what we are doing is we are being good stewards of the land. And the best way that we can be good stewards of the land is actually increasing the soil and making the soil better on the properties that we have. So it doesn't necessarily have to even apply to the farm, but it can apply even to your yards if you're in suburban America or something like that. And so hopefully this will be a good show for you. But before we actually look at that, I want to direct you to the website. Make sure that you are checking that out regularly. I haven't done a lot of updates on it because I'm working on getting the new website up and running, which is going to be on a different platform. And so I'm trying to transfer over everything, which has taken a great deal of time. But once we get over there, then I'll be able to start producing some more content for you all and getting everything set up for it. And so looking forward to that. But for now, you can check us out at thelegacypodcast.net and be sure that you are following us on Facebook at Facebook/thelegacypodcast. And then also you want to make sure you tell your friends about us. If you like what this show is all about, what we're doing here, then be sure to tell somebody about it so that we can continue to grow the audience and that we can continue to be able to provide more value. I can get more feedback, that kind of thing. Speaking of feedback, if you haven't given me any feedback, I would certainly encourage you to do that. You can do that in three different ways. One, you can give feedback to on just each of the segments or each of the episodes on the comments section. You can also give feedback under iTunes. And then you can give feedback directly to me at feedback@thelegacypodcast.net. And that would be great. I'd be able to find out more about you and find out what you're wanting to find out, what you're wanting to learn, what things you like about the Legacy Podcast, what things you'd like to see change. It doesn't mean I'll necessarily do those things, but certainly it'd be nice to hear from you since you get to hear from me. So be sure to do that. And then make sure that you have signed up as a member on the website. You can do that up in the right-hand top corner of the website where it says register. And when you register, that allow you to be a member. It'll enable you to get into our members section, which for now only has two items, but we're working on building that. And, of course, the more members that we have, the more I will be able to contact vendors and contact various sources to get more resources in there for the members. So I encourage you to do that. Top right hand corner of the website, register, and there's no cost to that, no obligation. I'm not going to be spamming you with all kinds of emails and that kind of thing, but it will just be able to help grow the audience and grow the website. So I appreciate you doing that. And with that, that takes care of the business. So let's go ahead and talk about soil. First of all, let's ask the question, why do we want good soil? Well, the soil is really the life of the farm. If you want to build a legacy, as I mentioned earlier, it's fundamental that we actually have good soil. We don't want to leave from here having depleted our entire property of good nutrients. I mean, that's taking more than we give. We want to be able to give more than we take. And so we want to make sure that we are contributing to the soil life, contributing to the humus content, continuing to increase the organic matter in the soil, building topsoil rather than depleting it all. Now, if you look at the situation around America today, we'll know that we are fast and quickly depleting the topsoil in farms and in non-farm areas. And I read somewhere one time that the fastest or the largest export from America is topsoil in our rivers and streams as it goes into the oceans. And so what a tragic thing that we are depleting the nutrients in the soil in our land to such an extent. Now, there is a book I have on the recommended reading list called Gaia's Garden by Toby Hemingway. It's a fantastic book, and I guess it's on page 70, something like that. He talks about soil. He's got several pages in there talking about soil and the benefits of soil. And one of the great things about that book is the way in which he writes. It's almost poetic. And he has a great description of all the ways in which soil is benefited and the various ways in which the different organisms within the soil work symbiotically to increase the availability of nutrients and so forth. And it's just a great couple pages in that chapter. So I encourage you to read that if you haven't. Not everything that I get from here, of course, is coming from that. A lot of it's my own experience. A lot of it's from other material. But certainly by being able to read that, you'll be able to gain a greater depth of understanding as well as a greater appreciation for God's design in the soil. And so there is as much life in the soil as there is above the soil. So when you think about what's above the soil, when you look at bugs crawling on it, when you look at, you know, a man walking on it, birds flying above it, if you look at all the various beasts and insects and everything else that you can find above the soil, there's just as much and more underneath the soil or in the soil that gives it life. This whole concept that soil can be dead and is just a place for roots to go and that we feed the soil is just so contrary to creation. And we see in creation there are so many different organisms in the soil that give it life. Just for an example, if you take 1 teaspoon of soil, good soil, it has over 1 billion bacteria. In one teaspoon, it has over 1 billion bacteria. 5,000 different varieties of bacteria is found in there. But not only that, it also has 1 million fungi and 10,000 amoeba. And so, you know, when you combine all those various organisms together, there's just a plethora of soil. You know, we look at the soil and we think it's just dirt. There's actually, if it's good soil, there's actually so much life in that soil. It's incredible. We want to be able to increase the content of these organisms. And let me just give you an example of one of these. For example, the worm. We're all familiar with worms, whatever it might be. Hopefully you've got a whole lot of worms. And there's various different kinds of worms, all different kinds, of course, in the soil, working it up. And one of the statistics I found while researching this is that a worm will turn soil at a rate of 1 inch every 10 years. Now, you might think about that and you might say, well, that's not a whole lot. But when you think about the amount of land that's actually turned by worms on a yearly basis, when you consider the entire globe and how much land mass there is and how much of that land mass is rototilled, for sake of a better word, by God's rototillers, which is the worms in the soil that mix it all up and provide tunnels and aerate it and all the things that we try to do with our tillers, the worms are doing at a rate of 1 inch every 10 years. So that, you know, that's incredible work that they're doing. You know, we talk a lot about being able to use God's design and God's creation for building a legacy and cooperating with His creation, cooperating with His laws and His systems that He has put into place. Well, what a great system it is to be able to have these organisms, worms, working to turn the soil and to build it and leaving their castings behind, all this kind of thing. And so I say all that kind of as an introduction to say that what we want to do is we don't want to feed the plants. We want to actually feed these organisms in the soil. So if you think about building a legacy in the soil, what we are trying to do is we are trying to build so much food in the soil for these organisms that they explode. Because when these organisms explode and they have all the proper habitat that they need in order to live and to prosper, they're able to do their work. And when they're able to do their work, then they make a happy and healthy soil, which builds that soil. And then when that soil is built, then whatever we put in that soil, whether it be a perennial or a grass, or usually most grasses are perennial, or whether it is an annual, whatever it might be, when we put something in that soil, it just thrives because there's so much life in the soil itself. And so what are some ways in which we can build this good soil? I want to talk about seven ways. And of course, there are so many other ways, and we could break down each one of these into very specific and concrete ways as well, but we're going to just kind of give an overall view, from a mile high look at ways in which you can build soil. And some of these I'm hoping you are already practicing. If you're not already practicing them, I'm hoping that you are at least familiar with them, but maybe you'll be able to gain a little bit of insight from this that will be able to inspire you or instruct you on how to build good soil. So the first one is have herbivores on pasture. In other words, what I mean by this, Joel Salatin has mastered really this whole concept, and if he hasn't mastered it, he's certainly made it popular with his face, with his polyface farm and how he rotates the herbivores along the pasture and builds the soil through, their mowing of the grass and leaving behind their manure and manuring the fields and having the chickens come behind and scratch, But what he's doing, and he will tell you this, if you listen to him or read any of his books or material or anything like that, he will tell you what he's doing. He's only mimicking nature. And when you think about it, the Great Plains that used to have millions and millions of bison all across it, eating and migrating all around it, just were able to build up that region. In fact, that whole area that now is just given over to so much corn crop production is still reaping the benefits of thousands of years of these bison roaming that area and building the soil. And so now, it's hard to find the kind of soil that was there when the settlers began there. But when the settlers began there, the topsoil was sometimes 2-3 feet deep because of this system of herbivores on pasture. And so one of the ways in which we can build soil, and maybe the best way, is by having herbivores on pasture. Same thing could be true, when you look at the African buffalo and the Serengeti Plain and how, they are able to have so many diverse species on that one plain and being able to have just, thousands of animals grazing that area and actually building the soil of that area. And it's in areas where there aren't perennials on pasture and where there's no animals, herbivores, eating that pasture, that the pastures and the forests and other places are becoming, more and more rugged and more difficult to cultivate and just are going to depleted resources. And so moving animals around on paddocks, as I mentioned before, Joel Salatin does this, and so many other people too have mastered this skill of moving animals around the pasture. I know Graham right now, our oldest boy, he operates our sheep and cows on the farm, and he's rotating them around. We've got tons and tons of grass right now because it's been growing really good this spring, and of course now this summer they've really put on the growth, and we've just got a ton of grass around here, and he's continuing to build the soil with that. Whatever the animals don't eat gets trampled and gets buried and under the manure, and then the manure decomposes, just builds all this great humus content in the soil. It's organic matter, and boy, what a great thing for the soil. The soil loves that, and so that's one of the ways in which we can build soil, having herbivores on pasture. Another way is by using mulch. It's not surprising that when you look at nature, nakedness is considered an oddity. Rarely do you find anything that's naked. God clothed man after the fall, and there were spiritual reasons for that, but we also know that there were probably physical reasons as well. And when you look at animals, most animals have some kind of covering. They have some kind of fur, some kind of hair, some kind of scale, something that is covering them. And, the same can be held true when you look at the ground and the soil. There's something that normally covers the soil, that protects the soil, that keeps it from the elements. When you have soil exposed out into the sun, that sun actually solarizes it to the point where it becomes lifeless, and the life is destroyed, and it's almost as though it radiates the life away in this oil. But when it's covered with a mulch or some other kind of material, it's able to build soil and not deplete the soil. And so, you know, you don't see barrenness, you don't see nakedness in nature, you don't see it in creation. And when you do see a place maybe where you've tilled up in your garden to make way for annual vegetables or something like that, what is the first thing that happens to that soil? First thing that happens to the soil before it starts getting baked out by the sun is you see weed seedlings starting coming up. Well, that is God's way. It's God's design of covering the soil. You know, we look at weeds and we think, well, that's, you know, we want to get rid of those weeds. We don't want those in our garden. But those are actually designed by God to be opportunistic plants where they find an opportunity to cover up the soil and they take advantage of it and they do a great job in it. And so, you know, we shouldn't be so hard on the weeds. Rather, we should look at our practices and say, why in the world are we getting so many weeds? We're getting so many weeds because our soil is naked. And God wants to cover it, and he covers it with weeds. And so, what are some various kinds of mulch? Well, there are basically two types. There's inorganic mulch, and there's organic mulch. Inorganic mulch would be things like black plastic, and, you know, there's a farm near where I live who they produce all kinds of conventional vegetables to local grocery stores in the area. And, you know, they've got, you know, over 1,000 acres, I think, of vegetable production. And when you drive by there, you just see acres after acres of these perfectly manicured rows because they have plastic, black plastic that they put down over their crops in order to mulch out the soil. And then, you know, other times you'll hear about people putting down clear plastic, and the clear plastic, of course, is almost to solarize the soil and to burn up the weed seeds underneath it. And the light can get through, but the heat can also be so intense in there that it'll actually solarize and radiate the soil. And, you know, so I don't recommend inorganic mulches except for one kind, and that is rock. Now, rock is not organic. You know, it's contained minerals and things like that are found in it. But it can be used as a great mulch. In fact, you know, rocks can serve multiple purposes on the ground because they're able to absorb moisture and radiate that moisture then into the ground. They're also able to cover the ground, keep it protected from the sun. They're able to make the temperatures hotter sometimes and cooler sometimes. And so they can work as a great mulch, but they're an inorganic mulch. But then if you look at the various types of organic mulch, you know, the sky's the limit here. I mean, of course, there's hay, there's straw, there's wood chips, there's grass clippings, there's cardboard, there's paper, there's, you know, all the leaves. You know, you can make a whole list of all the different kinds of material that is found organically, and those can all be used as mulch. And this helps protect the soil again. It helps make sure that the soil is not exposed. It helps retain moisture within the soil. It makes sure that there is a place for good insects. Of course, it also makes a place for bad insects, but it makes a place for the good insects to hide and to bury themselves if conditions are not suitable. Another thing about mulch that is beneficial is that, you know, when the rain falls heavily upon the ground, it doesn't splatter up mud onto the leaves of the plants, because when that happens, of course, they're more susceptible to diseases and rots and things like that. And so mulch is a great way to preserve the soil, and we need to make sure that we are always mulching the soil. Now, there are some people who argue, well, I can't mulch the soil because it's too hard to work through the mulch. Others will say that I can't mulch the soil, especially in spring, because the soil won't warm up good enough for that. Well, certainly those can be arguments, but the strengths of mulch far outweigh those criticisms of it. And so using mulch, and that's the second way in which we are able to build the soil. A third way is to stop tilling. Now, I know that probably most people who have gardened have tilled, and I recently, up until recently, have tilled. I recently just sold my tiller. And no longer going to do that. In fact, what I'm using now, and I'm going to do a review on it here soon, but it's called a broad fork. I've had a couple of different ones. The one that I have now is just fantastic. And I will put a link in the show notes to where I got it, as well as give a review here soon on my blog regarding it. But it is fantastic resource, a great tool, because it does what a tiller should do, yet with none of the drawbacks to a tiller. And so it's really good. But a tilling actually destroys the soil structure, because the way that it chops it up, it actually makes it so fine and so compacted, as though it's supposed to aerate it and supposed to give it some roominess to it. What it ends up doing is it chops up everything so fine that there's more surface area exposed, and as a result of that, it compacts even further. It also makes weed seeds appear. When you turn over the soil like that, what happens is those weed seeds that have been in the soil dormant for a while now then are activated and come back. That's why often when you when you till an area, the first thing that comes up is seeds. We've already mentioned that the seedlings start coming up from the weeds as a result of trying to cover the exposed land, but also they will come up because they were hidden away in there, and now that you've tilled it, they're coming to the surface. It also releases oxygen and microorganism overload. It causes these organisms to really duplicate and overreact to what's going on, because they want to be able to make sure that they stay alive. And so they are trying to produce enough of themselves to eat and feast upon all the new oxygen that has been exposed through the tilling process. And as a result of that, what happens is it's almost like overload. The best way of describing it is similar to somebody who has a huge amount of sugar all at one time. Our bodies can't handle that, and so we are injected with this huge amount of insulin, and that insulin then breaks down the body really quickly, and so we have these highs and lows when we eat all this sugar, because our insulin is an overload. Well, the same thing is true here when it comes to tilling the ground, because when you till the ground, what happens is all this oxygen is exposed, and it's like overloads. These organisms, which are similar to the insulin then, would come in to try to balance everything out, and then once they're overly populating the soil and the oxygen is no longer there, they die back, and the cycle has to be repeated. And so tilling is a horrible means of producing soil, and it really destroys it. Another problem with tilling is that it kills the worms. I noticed that this last time that I tilled, all the worms were either running or they were being chopped up. And I hate to see that, because I know that they are only representative samples of all the microorganisms and all the various creatures and critters that God has placed within the soil to build that soil. And we're just destroying it with our tillers. And so when I use my broad fork and I scoop up that soil, or, you know, fork up the soil, it aerates and does all the things that a tiller is supposed to do. But I can still see the worms alive. I haven't chopped them up. They don't run. They're not scared. And it works out really great with that. So stop tilling. Put herbivores on pasture. Use mulch. Number four is to compost. Now, there are both pluses and minuses to compost. Most of you probably heard about composting, probably are already participating in composting and have a compost pile in which you put all your kitchen scraps and whatever leftovers from the garden or whatever it might be you put in there to decompose, and then put that back on the plant. So what we're doing is recycling organic matter in a compost pile, which, you know, is great. We should be involved in recycling, but I know that there are other ways that are more beneficial than building a compost pile for recycling wastes. But here are some of the pluses. It adds organic matter, which then feeds the soil. As I mentioned before, these microorganisms and all these worms and things like that, they eat all the organic matter that is decomposing. They help decompose it. They digest it, and they put out their back end, their manure, and then other insects come, and they eat those manure, and the cycle just continues. And so, you know, the great value of compost is that you're providing them with all this organic matter, which is helpful for the animals or the creatures within the soil. It also is easily broken down. That's another benefit. So when you put it around your plants or something like that, it's something that can not quickly release like a petroleum based fertilizer, but rather it does help in the sense that it's much more quick in breaking down than something like hay or something like wood chips or something like that. And so that is a benefit, especially if you're working around a lot of highly cultivated vegetables and things like that. The mulch can be beneficial in that way, especially if it's small seeds or something where you can't really work around hay or leaves when it comes to that. And, it's really easy to help the plants grow. The plants love it. The plants are able to grow right through it, and so there's no barrier there. And as the compost breaks down, it is made available to the roots of the plants, and they thrive in the compost. And so those are the pluses. Some of the benefits or some of the disadvantages of having a compost pile is that it's a lot of work. Of course, my compost pile, I don't have bins for it. I use like a mound that I continue to expand out over a various area. And so it continues to grow lengthwise, and I just take from the side that is already decomposed enough to be used and just keep working my way down. And so I don't have a bend that you put the stuff in, but some people build a bend. And of course, when you build a bend, there's energy going into the building of that. And then, there's a lot of work in the sense of having to go out there and get all the right ingredients, put it all together, and then you got to constantly turn it over if you wanted to be quick in decomposing and make fast compost. And so there's a lot of labor-intensive activities that go into building a compost pile if you build it, the fast and furious way, so to speak. The other problem with a compost pile, so to speak, is that it doesn't capture the nutrients very well. In fact, if it's out in the open and it rains, a lot of those nutrients are being leached back into the soil underneath the compost pile. And so when you take the compost pile or compost that's made from the compost pile and put it into the garden or wherever you're putting it, you've already lost a great deal of the nutrients through exposure, erosion, through leaching into the ground, that kind of thing. And so, you're better off if you're going to compost in place where all that nutrients is going to stay there. And of course, this makes a little bit more challenging sometimes, but it's certainly a better means in general and overall than using compost. But compost can be great, as I mentioned earlier. The fifth is cover crop. And, there are different kinds of cover crop, as you might suspect. Some of the types, of course, they're popular is legumes. Of course, legumes are those that are from like the pea family. Pea is a legume, and it is they are designed to be able to take nitrogen from the soil and store it as excess in its roots. And so this is a way to build the soil's nitrogen by having leguminous plants as a cover crop. And, sometimes people will put grains in there as well, or they mix the grains and the legumes together. Buckwheat's a very common cover crop to be used, especially in the summertime when it's such a fast-growing cover crop and it's able to, bring in good beneficial insects as well. And, some people put in a cover crop in the wintertime that they then work in the springtime before the beds or to get the beds available. And other times you can have summer cover crops or sometimes you can have a cover crop that's worked as like a living mulch and then it stays there all the time except for when you're planting through it. And so, this is the idea behind the cover crop. And the benefits is that it keeps the soil covered. As I mentioned before, that's a good thing. We don't want naked soil. And so a cover crop is able to keep the soil covered, which of course relieves it from the solar exposure and things like that, erosion. It also can add nitrogen if it's a leguminous plant and it's worked into the soil, or even if it's cut up or cut and drop, that kind of thing, right where it is, the nodules on those roots then get rid of some of that nitrogen that has been built up on it as the work of the legume plant does. And so this is a way to add nitrogen to the soil too, to some extent, by having a cover crop. You can do this a little bit to some extent too when you mow the grass. Let's say you've got clover in your garden or clover even in your yard. When you mow that, you are taking some of the needs of that plant and putting it back into the ground. And so as a result of that, the roots then give off some of their material that's been built up in there, so that, and that of course then is released into the soil, which benefits the soil. Now, some of the challenges with a cover crop is that it does take water. So let's say you've got some plants planted and you've also got a cover crop planted, and you know you would like for the water to go only to your plants, but it can't because the water is being shared by all these other plants that are with it. So that can be a challenge. Another challenge is that it's hard to work when it's grown. So let's say you got this good patch of clover and ryegrass or something, maybe some clover and some buckwheat or things like that, and then you know you've cut it down, but you still have that structure in the soil that would prevent it from being sown very easily. And so, you know, it's hard to work. That could be a disadvantage to the cover crop. So anyway, that's number five. Number six is rotate the crops and have a polyculture. I put those two together, even though they could be separated out, but they, you know, they relate to similar ideas. And so I'm going to cover them together. And what the idea is behind this is that different plants use different needs within the soil. And some plants put down a tap root. Other plants have real shallow root systems. Some plants are very high nutrient requirements. Others are very low nutrient requirements. Some need lots of nitrogen. Others store nitrogen in the soil and in their roots. And so, you know, when you combine the various kinds of plants together in a polyculture, or when you combine them together and you rotate them around to various places, you are doing the same thing. Of course, I like the polyculture better than the actual rotating around, but you still can do the same with either one. And what it does is that it makes sure that any one place is not overly consumed with one plant. So, and then as a result of that, the soil nutrients are depleted very quickly in that area of the needs of that plant. When you work them together, it eliminates this. So let's think about this for a moment. Let's suppose you've got a carrot that is growing near a lettuce plant. Well, of course, the carrot has a long tap root, and it is able to go down deep into the soil and mine minerals and mine other requirements that are needed by surface-oriented plants. And lettuce is a surface-oriented plant, and so by drawing up, the carrot is able to draw up through its roots the good minerals that are down deep, and then it's able to let those out, and the lettuce is able to then enjoy those. And or you can take the leaves from the carrot and compost those, and that compost will be able to have those nutrients. But again, it's better just to cut and drop right there and provide it with the resources that it needs. And so, you know, together they're able to produce more than if they were individually planted in individual locations. And of course, this just goes back to the whole concept of having a polyculture, making sure that we are expressing what nature expresses, and that is nature never has one thing all across. That's only in man. If you look at the forest where man has planted, it's all one tree. Well, that never happens in nature. God has designed there to be all different kinds of species, and within those various kinds of species, all different kinds of divergence within there in different kinds. So it displays the glory of God in that way as well. And then I would say number seven, and finally, but certainly not least, is don't spray. I mean, most of you probably already know that. Most of you probably aren't spraying, but when you spray, you kill the life in the soil. We look at the, you know, the potato bug or something like that, and we say, oh, we don't want to get rid of that, or we don't want that, we want to get rid of it. And so we spray it, and by spraying it, what we're doing is we're killing all the organisms around it, and sometimes we're even killing the organisms in the soil, and we have to bring that back. And then we wonder why the next season the potato beetles are worse than the season before it. Well, it's because we never did what was right with the soil. We never treated the soil the way that it should have been treated. And we sprayed all these different kinds of insect killers and everything that affected the soil. And so don't spray. And so let's kind of review: herbivores on pasture, use mulch, stop tilling, compost, cover crops, rotate crops or use a polyculture, and then don't spray. Well, hopefully that's been helpful to you. And hopefully you've got a few ideas as well as maybe some inspiration to encourage you to build your soil. So whether you are in the suburbs on a, you know, an apartment with just a patio out back, you know, you can still apply these principles to some extent to the soil you have in your container garden out there. Others of you maybe have, you know, a 4x4 plot, a square foot garden or something like that, and you can build the soil in that. And then others of you may have small farms like we do, and certainly you can implement these principles so that you can build a legacy in the soil of microorganisms galore, worms that are happy and content and producing for us an abundance in the soil. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue helping you build a multi-generational legacy of the abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?